So for our third speaker, we're going to change gears and move to radiation oncology. Dr. Corey Spears is currently an assistant professor at the Department of Radiation Oncology at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. He received his MD and PhD from Baylor College of Medicine and completed his internship and training at Methodist Hospital in Houston. He then transitioned to the Department of Radiation Oncology at the University of Michigan, where he currently is practicing. Dr. Spears.
Thank you for that introduction and the invitation to be here. Also, thanks to Dr. Chen for that wonderful talk and kind of overview of HER2 disease. As was mentioned, we are totally going to shift gears away from that. Unfortunately, we did not have six oral presentations to go over from San Antonio. In fact, we only had one. But what I've been asked to cover, actually, is where we are in terms of bringing molecularly stratified genomic signatures into the clinic for radiation decision making. There was a big session at San Antonio this year that I was part of where that was discussed, and I've been asked to kind of recount some of that. So I'll touch briefly on the one oral abstract that was presented at San Antonio and then spend the most of the time talking about molecularly based signatures for treatment decision making for radiation oncology decisions. I think most of this audience is a medical oncology crowd, and so it might be some insight into what might be coming down the pipeline in the next few years as it comes to making decisions for radiation treatment. Here are my relevant disclosures. And so, as I mentioned, as an overview of what we're going to go over, I will update the single trial that was presented at San Antonio. We'll talk briefly about prognostic and predictive signatures for guiding systemic therapy decisions, specifically chemotherapy decisions. All of you will be very well familiar with these, so we won't spend a lot of time on that. And then we'll review the developments of prognostic and predictive signatures to guide radiation decisions, as that may be more new to many of you. And then I'll summarize at the end the ongoing genomically stratified clinical trials that are really looking at a question of radiation omission in very low risk, favorable risk patients with eyes towards radio intensification trials in the future. All right, so at San Antonio this year, there was a 10-year update of the Italian APBI IMRT trial. So this is accelerated partial breast irradiation trial, a little bit different than many of the other trials that were presented in 2018 at San Antonio, where we had the rapid trial update and we had update of the NSABP B39 trial. Those were trials looking at both a brachytherapy as well as an external beam question with 3D. This is an IMRT-based APBI trial, phase 3 trial, from the Italian group, and they presented their 10-year follow-up. So just as a matter of background, both ESTRO and ASTRO have recommendations for suitable patients who can undergo partial breast irradiation. This is where we as radiation oncologists don't treat the entirety of the breast after surgery, but just focus on where the tumor was initially, the surgical margin and the lumpectomy cavity with some margin. And there were some updates to the suitable categories from ASTRO in 2016 that now include patients over the age of 50 with negative margins at least to 2 millimeters. They didn't we didn't think patients with node-positive disease were suitable. They should have had early-grade disease and low-stage T-stage disease. ESTRO has similar guidelines. They haven't updated them since 2010, but that's the background upon which the study was run. So this was the IMRT Florence trial. It's a phase 3 trial, 500 patients. Patients received breast-conserving surgery. They had tumors smaller than 2.5 centimeters. They had widely negative surgical margins, so greater than 5 millimeters. And patients were allowed to be 40 years old or older. They were then randomized to a short course of radiation. So this radiation course is different than have been used on the RAPID or the NSABP trial. So this was 5 fractions. 30 gray, 6 gray per fraction, treated on non-consecutive days, so a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Monday, Wednesday type treatment. And then the standard arm, which I would argue is not the standard arm, but the arm that they compared this to was to a longer standard fractionation arm of basically 6 weeks of daily radiation. And then the primary endpoint was in breast tumor recurrence, and there was a number of secondary endpoints, including overall and breast cancer specific survival, as well as contralateral breast cancers and toxicity and cosmesis. So this is how they delivered their radiation. They used step-and-shoot IMRT, just kind of a fancy way to kind of get the dose to go where we want it to go. They mandated that surgical clips were placed in the lumpectomy cavity at the time of surgery. They then added a margin onto that and then a secondary setup margin. So actually the volumes that were treated here were, if you look at patients, at least Italian patients, for example, this would have covered most of the breast tissue, actually, with this partial breast technique. But they had about 2 centimeter margins on their lumpectomy cavity. They had dose constraints to the lung, to the heart, and to other normal tissues. And these were the demographics of the patients on the trial. So you can see that they're well balanced between both groups, as you would expect from a randomized phase 3 trial. But most of the patients were over the age of 50. Most of them had grade 1 or 2 disease. Most of them had small tumors, so T1 tumors. Most of them did not have nodal involvement, were ER positive, luminal-like, and didn't receive any systemic therapy, including endocrine therapy. At least a significant percentage of the patients did not. And here's the results of their 10-year update. Basically, there's no significant difference between in-breast tumor recurrence between those that received whole breast, 6-week daily radiation, versus those that received just the 5 treatments. There was no a numerically higher rate of recurrences in the APBI group, but not a significant difference between the two. And as you can see, even at 10 years, the rates of in-breast tumor recurrence after radiation in the modern era, this is consistent with what we're seeing now, generally in these low-grade, ER-positive, small tumors, the local recurrence rates are less than 5% at 10 years. When they looked at the adverse events, what they found kind of consistently is acute skin toxicity was better with APBI than with the whole breast radiation. Again, I would argue that the control arm that they used here, the 6-week course of radiation very few of us are using nowadays, the reason we don't use it is because, A, it's 6 weeks compared to 3 to 4 weeks, and we know that the skin toxicity with the longer course regimen is much higher than it is with the moderately hypofractionated shorter course of radiation. But not surprisingly, the APBI had less acute skin toxicity, any toxicity, certainly less grade 1 and grade 2 as well, and no grade 3. In terms of late toxicity, any toxicity was also lower with the APBI group, the partial breast radiation, compared to the whole breast longer course of radiation. And then when you look at physician or patient-reported cosmesis outcomes, again, significant improvement in the patients that got the partial breast radiation over 5 treatments compared to those that had the daily treatment for 6 weeks. So in context, there's been a number of other trials, including two that were reported at San Antonio last year, that basically let us know and feel comfortable that treating with a partial breast irradiation is a reasonable option for suitable patients. So the Canadian, New Zealand, Australian rapid trial, which had many more patients, about 2,000 patients, they used a 3D conventional treatment. They did twice daily radiation for 1 week. Versus standard or hypofractionation. They showed similar in-breast tumor recurrence rates as we saw here on this Florence trial, but there was much worse late cosmesis with this twice daily for 1 week treatment regimen. I think that has been seen over and over again in these trials. There's also the NSABP B39 trial that was reported in 2018 at San Antonio as well. That had 4,000 patients, again, randomizing to this twice daily radiation versus a longer course of standard radiation. In that trial, there were numerically higher rates of in-breast tumor recurrence. We've seen that repeatedly in all these partial breast trials, numerically higher rates of in-breast tumor recurrence, but both patient populations do very well. And then they saw slightly higher rates of grade 3 and grade 4 or 5 toxicity in these partial breast treatments. So what this data, I think, argues is that giving a shorter course of radiation is very reasonable. Probably doing it in 5 treatments on non-consecutive days probably improves late toxicity and cosmesis and fibrosis in these patients, and is a very reasonable option for patients who fit these criteria, that are over the age of 50, have ER-positive tumors that are small without nodes involved. And that was the real one highlight from San Antonio. So I'm going to transition a little bit to the session that was held at San Antonio to give an update on molecular signatures in breast cancer. And as I mentioned, I was going to talk about prognostic and predictive signatures in relationship to chemotherapy response, and then talk about radiation response signatures and where the status is of that currently, and then end, as I mentioned, on the reviewing the currently ongoing molecularly stratified clinical trials. So I think what everyone will appreciate is that there's two ends of the treatment spectrum. So we know that for certain patients, more effective surgical and systemic therapies have made adjuvant radiation therapy unnecessary. These are women that are cured with surgery and or endocrine therapy alone. For other patients, current multimodality therapy is ineffective in preventing the recurrence of disease and or disease progression. And that could be because we have ineffective therapies. It could also be because we have inadequate risk stratification of these patients up front. We're not giving them the appropriate treatment they need up front. And so all of you will be familiar with the EBC-TCG Oxford meta-analysis. This is the data, the pooled data from the randomized phase 3 trials that established the role for adjuvant radiation therapy in women who undergo breast-conserving surgery. What this data clearly showed is that at 10 years, women who underwent breast-conserving surgery alone had about a 30% risk of in-breast tumor recurrence or local regional recurrence, and that could be reduced to less than 10% with the addition of radiation. That was the data that provided the rationale for this being the gold standard for women. What this data also highlights, though, is that 70% of these women were cured with surgery alone, and most of these trials were run in an era pre-endocrine therapy, and so they were probably cured with surgery without any additional need for any adjuvant therapy, and that's a sizable percentage of the population. And of course, there's this 10% of patients who, despite multimodality therapy, are going to develop a local recurrence. And so the real question that we have as radiation oncologists is trying to identify which individual rather than which group of patients is going to benefit from adjuvant radiation. We know we're over-treating a large percentage of patients. We're probably under-treating a smaller percentage of patients. We know, as I mentioned, that 40% of the patients that have poor prognoses as defined as clinical conventional clin path parameters remain disease-free even if they don't get radiation, and the response to treatment is kind of heterogeneous, and some patients are cured without radiation, some don't need it at all. So when you talk about prognostic and predictive signatures, really this began in the systemic therapy space, right? This was pioneered by medical oncologists trying to understand how to more appropriately utilize chemotherapy in patients with breast cancer. And what was appreciated back kind of in the early mid-90s, early 2000s, was that the likelihood of developing distant recurrence in early-stage breast cancer patients is only about 15% at 10 years, which meant that if all these patients were getting chemotherapy, which was the standard of care at the time, you were over-treating 85% of these patients. And the real question was, can we identify those patients up front who benefited from chemotherapy and who could safely omit adjuvant chemo? And really, Oncotype DX from Genomic Health was the first group to really get into this area and trying to use the tumor biology to guide these decisions. So Oncotype DX was developed to quantify the likelihood of disease recurrence in women with ER-positive, node-negative breast cancer. It was developed as a prognostic test initially to identify who are these really low-risk women that even in the absence of anything will do well. And then it turned out to actually also be predictive of response to chemotherapy. And it's important to understand that there are differences between a prognostic test and a predictive test. It just so happens that Oncotype happens to be both. So you're all very well familiar with the 21-gene panel. Actually, the development of this is still completely fascinating to me. So it's a bunch of individuals that got together and went through the literature in cancer, basically, and pulled out 250 genes out of the 1,000 genes that are expressed and said, hey, we think these might be associated with chemotherapy response and prognosis in breast cancer. We're going to focus on these 250. They then use multiple permutations and algorithms and modeling to kind of see which of these 250 genes were most relevant in both prognostic settings and also in prediction of chemotherapy response, and landed on this 16 cancer-related gene panel. Most of these genes were associated with proliferation, invasion. They were in the HER2 pathway, and then obviously the estrogen receptor signaling pathway was important. And so this became the Oncotype 16-gene panel with 5 reference genes. It was then validated in the NSABP B20, where they were able to show that the recurrence score not only quantified the likelihood of breast cancer recurrence in women who were node negative, ER positive, but also predicted the magnitude of chemotherapy benefit in that patient population. They then went on and looked at this Oncotype score in node-positive patients. I mentioned it wasn't derived for that patient population, but they said we're probably over-treating node-positive patients as well. SWOG 8814, for example, was the trial that showed us that chemotherapy provided a significant benefit in node-positive patients, but they validated Oncotype as both being predictive and prognostic in that node-positive patient population as well. And then all of you will be familiar with Taylor X trial that was published 2 years ago at San Antonio and has changed the practice clinically for women with intermediate-risk score disease who do not benefit from chemotherapy either. So Oncotype really kind of led the charge in this space. There's been a number of other groups. Mammaprint, marketed by Agendia, was developed differently. So basically, they took a cohort of patients who developed distant metastasis within 5 years and those that did not develop metastasis within 5 years. They profiled their tumors and looked at the gene expression data from that, and they identified the genes that were most significantly differentially expressed between those two groups, and that became their 70-gene panel. So it's not the exact same genes as Oncotype, but identifies similar types of patient populations. It was validated in the TransBIG study and also in MINDACT as also being prognostic and probably predictive as well. Prosigna, which subtypes breast cancers, we understand that breast cancer is a heterogeneous disease and that not everyone responds similarly. Prosigna and the PAM50 profiling allows us to kind of look at what the subtypes are of breast cancer and then also is able to predict mostly prognosis, but also somewhat predictive of benefit of chemotherapy as well in this space. So there's a number of signatures that are very useful clinically for guiding systemic therapy decisions. What about, switching gears, signatures that predict radiation response? Why don't we have those? So here's a list of all the currently approved predictive radiation response signatures. This slide is left intentionally blank because they don't exist yet, right? So we haven't quite gotten to the point where we're able to use that similar to the way that we use Oncotype or Mammaprint or Prosigna, but I think we're getting close, and I'll kind of highlight why we think that. Before I go on the radiation-specific signatures, a number of groups have said, well, why can't we just use Oncotype or Prosigna or Mammaprint to guide radiation decisions? And so I'm going to highlight some of that data initially where groups have looked at previously derived signatures to guide the risk of local regional recurrence after radiation and without radiation. And then I'll talk about the radiation-specific signatures in particular. So let's start with Oncotype DX. These are the previously derived signatures. Terry Mamounis, through the NSAPP, has been very active in this area and actually has presented a lot of very useful data that has been the foundation for a number of the trials that I'll talk about at the end. So what they did back starting in 2010 in a publication in JCO is they looked at local regional recurrence rates in NSAPP B14 and B20. These are trials in ER-positive and node-negative patients. One was asking an endocrine therapy question. The other one was asking about the benefit of chemotherapy. And what they did is they went back and ran Oncotype on all of those samples, or at least the samples that they could get from those two trials. And they also looked at local regional recurrence rates. So they didn't look at distant metastasis. They wanted to see whether Oncotype was associated with local regional recurrence in this cohort. And what you'll see on the left is that if you look at a pooled analysis from patients from B14 and B20, that the Oncotype recurrence score is associated with rates of local regional recurrence. So patients that had a low Oncotype score had the lowest rates of local regional recurrence. The patients that had the highest Oncotype scores above 31 had the highest rates of local regional recurrence. This held true in the B14 patients treated with placebo. That is, patients that didn't get any adjuvant therapy. It also seemed to be somewhat significant in the group of patients treated with chemo and tamoxifen in the B20 trial. They went on to look specifically at factors that were associated with local regional recurrence. And as you can see down at the bottom, the recurrence score risk group was associated in the entire cohort, at least of the tamoxifen-treated patients, with lower rates of local regional recurrence if you had a lower score. Obviously, other factors that we have known forever to be associated with local regional recurrence also fell out. So younger patients have higher rates of local regional recurrence. High-grade disease has higher rates of local regional recurrence. We had known this. But it looked like the recurrence score was also associated with risk of local regional recurrence. And this held true in the mastectomy treated patients who did not receive adjuvant radiation. What was interesting, though, when you look back in the study, that if the patients did receive radiation in the adjuvant setting, the Oncotype score really didn't add much to that. That is to say that all patients, whether they had a low Oncotype score or a high Oncotype score, all seemed to derive significant benefit with the addition of radiation, such that the local regional recurrence rates were very similar between all three groups, regardless of Oncotype score, if they received radiation, suggesting that maybe Oncotype, it isn't a predictive test. It's not telling us who's responding to radiation because all of these groups did. And then importantly, and this is really important, there is no data regarding recurrence rate by recurrence score in patients treated with lumpectomy without radiation, right? This is a very confounded cohort of patients. About half of them received radiation, about half didn't. And then you look at local regional recurrence rates, we know that radiation impacts that. That was not sussed out in this initial analysis. And so then Terry's group went on in a publication in JNCI in 2017 to say, well, let's look at it in the node-positive patient's situation. So they took NSABP-B28 trial. Again, that was a chemo sequencing trial. That's not particularly relevant. But they did run Oncotype on all of those samples and looked at local regional recurrence rates in this node-positive patient population. Again, looking at the entire cohort, you will see that those with the low Oncotype recurrence score had relatively low rates of recurrence after, even in the node-positive setting, and the patients with the higher Oncotype scores had the highest rates of local regional recurrence. But again, a mix of mastectomy and lumpectomy-treated patients. The patients that were treated with mastectomy received no adjuvant post-mastectomy radiation. The women that got lumpectomy did receive radiation, so it's a very mixed bag of patients. When you look at whether this was important for patients with 1 to 3 nodes positive versus 4 or more nodes positive, actually the recurrence score was not associated with local regional recurrence risk in the 1 to 3 node positive patient population. It was really only in those that had 4 or more nodes positive where it seemed to be useful. And again, when you looked at mastectomy versus lumpectomy in radiation-treated patients, it was not significantly associated with local regional recurrence risk in the 1 to 3 node patient population, either treated with mastectomy or lumpectomy with radiation. It was really in the 4 node, more node positive group. What I think is very interesting is in a patient population treated with mastectomy who had 4 or more nodes that did not get adjuvant radiation therapy, this is currently a group that we would all recommend treatment for, the rates of local regional recurrence for people who had low Oncotype scores was actually quite low. And that was very intriguing, that a subset of post-mastectomy patients with 4 or more nodes positive but a low Oncotype score might be able to omit adjuvant post-mastectomy radiation. I will contrast that, however, with a SWOG analysis that was just recently published. So keep that in mind. 4 or more nodes positive look like with a low Oncotype score, they really didn't benefit from radiation and didn't need it, and they had a very low risk. Wendy Woodward at MD Anderson and her colleagues just very nicely published a study that came out last week in JCO looking at the Oncotype score in terms of local regional recurrence in the SWOG 8814 trial. Again, that's a patient population that was all node positive. It was a question of looking at chemotherapy and established that chemotherapy provided a benefit in node positive patients. They got as many samples from that trial as they could get, so it's a very small subset of the actual trial, only about 10% of the patients. But in contrast to what Terry was able to show in the NSABP trial, B28, in SWOG 8814, those with 3 or more nodes positive, again, they did not receive radiation. There's really no difference in terms of recurrence score, or no association between recurrence score and local regional risk of recurrence. So maybe we can't use Oncotype to identify radiation omission in the 4 node or more node positive patient population. But it's an intriguing question nonetheless. So there's a suggestion that maybe these older signatures are associated at least prognostically with risk of local regional recurrence, but they really don't get at all at the question of radiation. Because there was such mixed treatment in those different trials, it's really hard to say whether radiation was providing a benefit and whether it was providing a differential benefit in patients, because you don't have patients that were randomized to the question at hand, which is, do we deliver radiation or not? So if you look at the radiation-specific signatures for invasive disease, there's been a few of these that have been developed and published and that are working their way into clinic. I'm going to focus on the ones that are working their way into clinic because there's been a lot of preclinical studies published in this space, but most of those have ended up not validating in external data sets or have not validated in clinical data sets. And so I'll focus on the ones that are at least working their way clinically. So there's the Danish Breast Cancer Group that published a signature called the DBC-GRT signature. It's really a radiation benefit signature. It was derived in the patients from the 82B and C trials. These are trials that established the benefit of post-mastectomy radiation in women with breast cancer, especially node-positive breast cancer. There's the Radiation Sensitivity Index, or RSI. This is a pan-cancer radiation signature to predict benefit of radiation based on the NCI-60 cancer cell line. So they took all cell lines that included a few breast cancer cell lines and developed a signature. There's a Radiation Sensitivity and Immune Signature that was recently published by a group group out of Stanford. Our group has been very active in developing Radiotype DX and the Arctic signature, and I will touch on these four signatures just briefly. So I'll start with the Danish signature. This, again, is a signature that was derived to predict the benefit of post-mastectomy radiation in women treated with mastectomy. So unfortunately, because they didn't have many data sets to use, they had to divide one data set into a training cohort and a testing cohort. Ideally, you'd like to have an independent validation data set. They weren't able to do that. But they developed a 7-gene signature in this group of 191 patients in which there was a high local regional recurrence risk group and a low local regional recurrence risk group. And the high-risk patients were the ones that were seen to have a benefit from radiation. The low-risk patients were seen to have no benefit. Interestingly, when they developed the signature, it was using fresh frozen tissue, so it was a 7-gene signature. When they platformed it over to be used with formalin-fixed paraffin-embedded tissue, they found that three of their genes just weren't stable in that transition, and so they had to drop those genes. So it's actually a 4-gene signature now, including these four genes listed here. And this is how it performed in their publication back in Clinical Cancer Research in 2014. There, in the patients on the left, you see that this is the training set, so this is how they developed the signature. In patients that were predicted to be high risk, there was a significant benefit with the addition of post-mastectomy radiation, such that the local regional recurrence rates went from almost 60% in the unirradiated patients down to less than 10% or so, or 12% in the patients treated with radiation. The low-risk group, even in the absence of radiation, had very low rates of local regional recurrence, and they were not improved with radiation. Here's how it performed in the training set with formalin-fixed paraffin-embedded tissue, and then this was the validation set, all from within the cohort, so it's not a true validation. That again shows that the high-risk patients predicted to be at high risk did derive a significant benefit with the addition of post-mastectomy radiation, and those that were predicted to be low risk really didn't derive much of a benefit from radiation. So the thought is that potentially this signature might be useful for identifying patients in the post-mastectomy setting who derive significant benefit from radiation, and they are attempting to validate this in clinical data sets moving forward. A group out of Moffitt, Javier Torres Roca, and his group has developed a radiation sensitivity index. I mentioned this was this radiation signature that was derived based on using the intrinsic radiosensitivity of 60 cancer cell lines, most of which were not breast, actually. Melanoma, non-small cell lung cancer, renal, ovarian were overrepresented in this signature development. They came up with a 10-gene signature that includes these genes listed here, and it was initially evaluated in esophageal, rectal, and head and neck squamous cell carcinoma, but there were some subsequent publications after this initial 2012 publication where they started to look at it in cohorts of patients with breast cancer. And so this was their first publication looking at it in a Swedish cohort. Again, it's looking at relapse-free survival probability, not local regional recurrence itself. But what they were able to show is that in their signature, when you treat with radiation, there was a significant difference between outcomes in patients that were predicted to be sensitive in this top bar and those that were predicted to be resistant in the dashed bar in terms of their response to radiation. And that when you looked at it in patients not treated with radiation, this signature was not prognostic in that setting. So they thought it really was a radiation-specific signature that identified radiation benefit, but wasn't prognostic or predictive in those that didn't receive any radiation. They went on to look at it based on whether you were treated lymphectomy or mastectomy without radiation. And again, it seemed to only work in the patients treated with radiation. There was no signal in the patients not treated with radiation. This was in a Dutch cohort as well. But again, the endpoint is a little bit peculiar. It's a distant metastasis-free survival endpoint, not a local regional control endpoint, which as radiation oncologists, we kind of think of our therapy having more of an impact on local regional recurrence-free survival. When they substratified this based on ER status, what they found is their signature seemed to only work in patients that were ER positive, and it didn't work in patients that were ER negative. This, again, was all patients treated with radiation, but it really seemed to only be working in the ER positive patients and not in the ER negative patients. So this was back in 2012. They then had a subsequent publication a few years later in 2015, which showed that no longer it worked in the ER-positive patients, and now it only worked in the ER-negative patients. So it's a little bit hard to know how to interpret this data. What has been very nice is that groups at the Cleveland Clinic, at the Broad, and Princess Margaret, they have published very nice studies very recently showing that the response to radiation really seems to be disease site specific, so that the pathways that drive radiation resistance in breast cancer are very different than the pathways that drive resistance in prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer. And so that maybe underscores why it's been very difficult to use all cancer cell lines to derive this signature. You really probably need to do that using a disease site specific approach. I'm going to skip briefly over the radiation immune gene signature. This is the one that was recently published just last year, I guess almost, we're now in 2020. So in late 2018, this was published by the Stanford group looking at a response to radiation. What it highlights, and I think the most important point of this signature, was a very kind of complicated but interesting way of devising both a radiation and immune response signature, is that when they looked at the previous signatures like Oncotype or RSI, there wasn't any significant interaction with radiation in these old in these cohorts of patients, suggesting that maybe Oncotype, unlike what was suggested with the Terry Mamuna's paper, isn't predictive of response to radiation. I'll touch briefly on our development of a signature at the University of Michigan. So we had a similar approach to the Javier Torres-Rocco group, except for we focused specifically on the breast cancer cell lines. We looked at the most intrinsically radio-resistant cell lines and the most radio-sensitive cell lines. We looked at the genes that were differentially expressed between those and found 147 genes that correlated with radiation sensitivity. We found 67 genes that were up in the radio-resistant group, 80 genes that were down in the radio-resistant group, and we used that to develop a clinical stratifier of radiation response. That is, a signature that would predict those that were resistant to radiation and those that were sensitive. And I won't show you the training data, but this is the external validation data. And what we found is that in those patients that were predicted to not recur, that is, to be sensitive to radiation, they had very low rates. Again, this is local regional recurrent survival, not metastasis-free survival, and this is all patients treated with radiation. They had very low rates of local regional recurrence. The patients that we predicted to be resistant to radiation had much higher rates of local regional recurrence after radiation. We have tried to improve this signature. Really, if you're going to use any of these signatures clinically, you either need to run a prospective randomized phase 3 trial, at which time we will have a readout of our answer in 18 to 20 years, or which is difficult to do, or you can take prospectively run randomized phase 3 trials of the question at hand, that is, does radiation provide a benefit or not, and then retrospectively look in that cohort at your signature in a locked fashion. And that's actually what we've tried to do. So we first collaborated with colleagues in Sweden. They ran the Swedish BCG trial. This is one of the seven seminal trials, randomized phase 3 trials, that showed us that there is a benefit to adjuvant radiation. This is a trial in patients that were early stage node negative, ER positive patients with small tumors that were randomized to radiation versus no radiation after breast conserving surgery. There are about 1,200 patients on this trial. And what we did is we attempted to improve radiotype DX in this setting. So we used a number of cohorts of patients that had been treated with breast conserving surgery, randomized to radiation or not. We took the radiation cohort and improved our signature in kind of a blinded way, and then sent that to our colleagues after we locked the model that included 27 genes and patient age, and sent it to our colleagues in Sweden to validate it in the SWE-BCG trial. So all of this was derived outside of the context of the SWE-BCG trial and then independently externally validated in that setting. And this is the data from the JCO paper that just came out a few months ago, looking at the signature that's now called ARTIC. What we identified is that ARTIC is prognostic for local regional recurrence and predictive as well of radiation benefit, at least in this cohort. So what you'll see is the patients that have low ARTIC scores have a significant benefit with the addition of radiation. They're predicted to be sensitive and to derive benefit from radiation. So those treated without radiation on this randomized trial had rates of local regional recurrence approaching 20% at 10 years. If they received radiation, that rate was less than 5%. In the patients predicted to be resistant to radiation, that is, they had a high ARTIC score, you can see that radiation still provides some benefit. It's not zero, but the proportional benefit of radiation in this cohort that's predicted to be not as responsive is less. When you look at ARTIC signature score by treatment arm, this is the RT-treated arm, this is the no RT-treated arm, you can see there's no significant delta between these curves. So that is, the patients that didn't receive radiation, there's really not much of a decrease when their score is high when they received radiation, but then the patients predicted to be sensitive to radiation, that is, they have an Arctic low score, there is a significant delta between these curves. That is, the patients that didn't get radiation had much higher rates of local regional recurrence than those patients that did not have a recurrence. And then really, if you're going to look at a predictive test, you have to prove that there's an interaction between the signature score and the intervention that you're interested in this course, in this case, radiation. So you have to run an interaction test. And so generally, these plots show that without an interaction, without a significant interaction with radiation, these curves would be parallel. That is, as your score increased, your rates of local regional recurrence would also increase, but these curves would run in parallel between the no treatment arm and the radiation treated arm. And if there's a significant interaction with radiation, these curves should then converge, which is exactly what we saw. That is, as your score increased, not only were you more likely to recur, but you were less likely to derive benefit from radiation. So we think that Arctic really is a, both a prognostic and a predictive test for radiation benefit that has been validated in the SWEET-BCG 91 trial. We've looked at Oncotype, MammaPrint, RSI, and a number of other signatures that have been developed in this space to see whether they were also predictive of radiation response, at least in the SWEET-BCG trial. It didn't seem to be the case, and actually most of them weren't prognostic for a local regional recurrence endpoint in this trial either, again suggesting that maybe Oncotype or MammaPrint isn't a great surrogate for radiation decision making. So Arctic is currently being validated in a number of other randomized phase 3 trials, the Scottish trial, the PRIME-1 trial, the Canadian randomized trial of women 50 years old or older randomized to plus or minus radiation, and we'll see whether it validates in that space. I'll skip now to decisions about what to do with patients with DCIS. This is where I think we're actually further along than we are for invasive disease. As many of you may have heard or have seen, Oncotype DX for DCIS is being clinically marketed across the country. This is a signature that uses Oncotype that's been altered some to predict whether a woman needs post-lumpectomy radiation for DCIS. So the development of this was a little bit unusual. So they used five different cohorts. Most of them included patients with invasive disease, but there was some patients with DCIS. And then they looked for what signature seemed to have the most signal in patients with DCIS, and then tried to validate it in the ECOG E5194 trial. That was a trial of women that we thought were very low risk for local regional recurrence that were randomized to plus or minus radiation who had DCIS. What happened when they did Oncotype DX for DCIS is they found that many of the genes weren't helpful in this setting, so they had to drop them. So this is really only a 7 cancer-related gene signature, unlike the 16 gene signature that Oncotype DX is. They dropped a number of the estrogen receptor signaling pathway genes, for example. And this was the performance of Oncotype DX for DCIS. Larry Solon has led this work. It's been very nice work out of JNCI back in 2013. And what they were able to show is that with Oncotype DX for DCIS low score, you had generally very low rates of in-breast tumor events compared to those that had higher intermediate risk. This is the 15% recurrence risk at 10 years. And you can see that those patients with the low risk score are slightly less than 15%. Patients that had intermediate or high risk Oncotype scores actually had greater than 15% local regional recurrent events at 10 years, a number that I think most of us feel is probably too high to recommend omission of radiation in that setting. They've subsequently been tweaking this signature by incorporating a number of clinical and pathological parameters into Oncotype DX for DCIS. This is work led by Larry Solon and Eileen Rakovich in Canada. And they've published some very nice data suggesting that if you include those other factors, including ClinPlat factors, age, margin status, grade of disease, you can improve the performance of Oncotype DX for DCIS. And it's a test that is orderable and available for use to guide radiation decisions. Again, the performance of it, this is 10% recurrence risk at 10 years, which I think most of us are comfortable talking to patients about it being reasonable to omit radiation if your risk of recurrence is less than 1% per year. You can see that even those predicted to be low risk don't quite reach that threshold. So this is 20% recurrence at 10 years. And with an Oncotype DX for DCIS score that's low, you can get close to the 10% at 10-year rate. There's one other signature that's marketed by Prelude DX. It's called Decision RT. Some of you may be familiar with this as well. This was designed independently of Oncotype. It was first published back in 2015. It incorporates different genes than Oncotype DX for DCIS. Here's their panel of genes, and it's actually a protein-based signature, not a transcript-based signature. Here was their initial publication in 2018 that showed that in a number of non-randomized cohorts from Sweden and from the University of Massachusetts, that those patients that had a low decision RT score really had very low rates of local regional recurrence at 10 years, and that the benefit of radiation was also very low in this patient population. So the rate in the absence of radiation was about 4%. With radiation, it was 3%. But if you had a decision RT score above 3, there you did actually seem to have benefit from radiation. So the rates of recurrence are much higher in the untreated group, and there is a significant benefit with radiation, at least in this non-randomized cohort, suggesting that decision RT is actually a prognostic and predictive test as well. They've gone on to do a number of clinical utility studies that I just blew right through that shows that if you use, for example, many of us will use the Memorial Sloan Kettering nomogram to predict likelihood of recurrence after lumpectomy for DCIS. It's a well-validated, very nice nomogram. What Decision RT has published recently, which I think is a little bit intriguing, is that they significantly reclassify patients based on that Memorial Sloan Kettering nomogram, such that patients that are considered low risk by ClinPath features, by the nomogram, they're considered to be low risk. About 60% of those patients were reclassified into the high risk group, meaning that they do derive significant benefit from the addition of radiation. Conversely, they found that about 30% of patients that were considered high risk by ClinPath, that we wouldn't consider omission of radiation after surgery for DCIS, actually probably don't benefit much from radiation. So it just highlights that using the biology of the disease might inform some of our decisions and might be helpful as we discuss these options with women in the adjuvant treatment setting. And then our group has not adopted this completely yet because this is very intriguing data that was published at San Antonio back in 2017, but we haven't seen the full manuscript yet. This was an actual external validation in the SWE DCIS trial. Swedish ran a lot of trials, which is really nice, but they ran a randomized trial in close to 500 patients that randomized women with ER-positive, small, widely negative margin DCIS to plus or minus radiation, and they were looked at decision RT score in that cohort. What they found is that patients with a low risk score really had no benefit from the addition of radiation, only a 1% absolute benefit in the low risk cohort at 10 years. The patients treated without radiation had a recurrence rate of about 8%, so less than 1% per year. With the addition of radiation, they could drop that to 7%. In the elevated risk group, so those with scores 3 or higher, the rate of local regional recurrence was closer to 12 to 13% at 10 years. But dropped to 3% with the addition of radiation, so really benefited from radiation in this context. We're waiting for the final publication to come out to see whether this data actually maintains, but if so, I think that will be a very strong indication that perhaps decision RT might be useful for guiding decisions for DCIS. And so I just want to end, just in the last minute or two, talking about the currently ongoing genomically stratified clinical trials. I wanted to touch on the fact that I don't think any of these are quite ready for prime time, but these are the trials that are currently using molecularly stratified signatures to guide treatment decisions. All of these trials have a similar general design. They basically include patients who are treated surgically with lumpectomy that commit to getting endocrine therapy for at least 5 years. And we're looking at whether we can safely omit radiation in these patient populations. So the IDEA trial, the Individualized Decisions for Endocrine Therapy Alone trial by Dr. Reshma Jagsi at the University of Michigan, is a non-randomized 200-patient trial that really is using Oncotype DX recurrence score as the risk stratifier. So patients with a low risk score are then given the option to omit radiation. We're following the outcomes in those patients. It's been closed to accrual for a while now, and we hope to report out the data probably in the next 2 years or so, because it's been closed for almost 3 years. Again, this is patients over the age of 50 with a low Oncotype score, and the primary endpoint is local regional recurrence rates compared to historical control. So does it stay very low in the absence of radiation if you have a low Oncotype score? Jennifer Bellin at the Dana-Farber is the PI on the profiling early breast cancer for radiation omission trial, the PRECISION trial. This is slightly different. It's also a non-randomized phase 2, almost 700-patient trial, including patients 50 to 75 years old who are considered low risk. The primary endpoint is rate of ipsilateral local recurrence at 5 years, and it is using Prosigna as a signature stratifier, not Oncotype. Examining personal radiation therapy for low-risk early breast cancer, the EXPERT trial by Boon Chua and the International Breast Cancer Study Group is a randomized phase 3 trial of close to 1,200 patients. This includes patients over the age of 50 who, by Prosigna, are luminal A and also have a low ROR score. The primary endpoint is 10-year local recurrence, and unlike the previous two trials that I mentioned, this is actually a randomized trial. So if you meet those criteria, you will be randomized to radiation or not in this context. The Lumina trial by Tim Whalen in Canada is a non-randomized observational trial, 500 patients. Instead of using Oncotype or Prosigna, they're actually using IHC, so that's ER, PR, HER2, and Ka67 levels, to identify the luminal A patients. They will get omission of radiation, and they'll follow the outcomes with a primary endpoint being 5-year in-breast tumor recurrence. And then the last one, at least in the node negative space, is the Prime Time trial. This is with Dr. Charlotte Cole at the University of Cambridge in the UK group. They're also looking at IHC metrics of luminal A patients. It's a non-randomized observational trial of close to 2,500 patients, looking at whether we can safely omit in this setting. I think it's important to highlight that the IHC-based tests, Prosigna and Oncotype, don't identify the same patient populations. So just because one trial may be positive or negative, it doesn't mean that the others all will be either. There's a lot of heterogeneity between patients that are identified as low risk by Oncotype, who are considered intermediate or high risk by Prosigna, or who are considered luminal A by IHC, but by Prosigna and PAM50 subtyping aren't luminal A. So it's important to understand that there's some distinguishing characteristics between these patient populations, and we'll see whether any of these tests work better than the others. The final trial that I'll touch on is actually for radiation omission in node-positive patients. I mentioned that we're probably over-treating all node-positive patients if we give them all radiation. So the MA39 or the Taylor-RT trial by Tim Whalen in Canada is a very nice trial design looking at whether we can omit radiation in the node-positive patient population. This, is, again, is using Oncotype DX to make that decision. It's a randomized phase 3 trial, close to a little over 2,000 patients. Women have to be over the age of 40 with a low Oncotype score. They can have 1 to 3 positive nodes if they had an axillary lymph node dissection. They can only have 1 or 2 nodes if they only had a sentinel lymph node biopsy. And basically, the randomization for women treated with lumpectomy is to plus or minus whole breast versus whole breast plus regional nodal radiation. And for patients treated with mastectomy, the question is just plus or minus post-mastectomy radiation, again, with a primary endpoint being breast cancer recurrence-free survival between the patients that receive radiation to the nodes versus those that did not. So these are the 6 trials that are currently open. I will highlight one that I can't officially say is open yet, but there's a trial working its way through the cooperative group in NRG that looks to be very similar to the Oncotype trial for women who have node-negative disease, but in this case it would be a randomized trial and not an observational phase 2 trial. It's being led by a number of investigators. Looks like it's gotten final sign-off from the steering committees and will be opening soon, potentially through the NRG. And so in summary, if you remember way back to the beginning of this, accelerated partial breast irradiation based on the IMRT data from Italy and the previously presented and published RAPID trial and NSCP-B39 trial is a very reasonable option for women at low risk of recurrence who are suitable per the ASTRO or ESTRO criteria. Probably delivering that on non-consecutive days versus twice daily is better for long-term cosmesis. I mentioned that genomic-based signatures are now common pace for guiding systemic therapy decisions. You use these every day in the clinic with Oncotype or MammaPrint. Genomic-based signatures are not yet validated for clinical use to guide radiation decisions, but I think we're getting close to that space. So if this talk is given in 3 or 5 years, I think there actually won't be a blank slide when we start this out. And we're waiting a validation for Oncotype or Prosigna or some of these radiation-specific signatures like the Danish one, the RSI or Arctic. I think we're actually much closer for DCIS. Oncotype for DCIS and DecisionRT are actually already being used by some centers. And I think with the validation of the study from the SWE-BCG, might be even closer to being utilized by various groups. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much for your talk. In regards to the APPI and the Italian study, did they report at all where the locations of their recurrences were?
No. So it was a presentation at San Antonio. They didn't get into that kind of granular level of whether it was a close miss, whether it was someone nearby. That data hasn't come out yet.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So for the accelerated partial breast radiation, what kind of equipment is required for that? Can conventional radiation therapy equipment be used with, you know, computer-generated fields?
Yeah, so the NSABP in the RAPID trial allowed either for brachytherapy, which is kind of sticking the radiation sources into the breast, or allowed for external beam radiation treatment. The IMRT trial from the Italian group was just all external beam radiation, so most any center could deliver that treatment. Doesn't need any special equipment.
So on that kind of a therapy, you know, given the fact that like in the, for example, in the DCIS trials for the NSABP, B24 and B17, mm-hmm. half the time that there was ipsilateral breast tumor recurrence, half the time it was in a different quadrant of the mm-hmm. breast. Half the time it was invasive, half the time it was non-invasive. So if you're doing an accelerated partial breast irradiation and radiating the site of the lumpectomy, aren't we missing those other half of the local recurrences?
Yeah, so that's been the argument against doing APBI for the longest time. I think the data is beginning to argue that, A, compared to historical controls, we're doing much better at controlling disease in both arms. And that is a theoretical concern. But when you look at the dosimetric distribution of dose based on these partial breast trials, unless you have a woman that is incredibly large-breasted, you end up treating a lot of the breast, even with these more conformal fields, just based on the margins that we put on them. So you have a lumpectomy cavity that's already 3 or 4 centimeters. You add a 2-centimeter margin to that. That's a big portion of the breast that's already being treated.
So basically, we're radiating almost the whole breast anyway.
Not the whole breast, but a significant portion in many women.
Okay. Then two other questions. As everyone in the room knows, we know that local regional radiation therapy seems to add a survival benefit for about 5% of the patients.
Right.
5 to 6% survival benefit. And we do that. Why is that? Why does local regional therapy change survival? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you have the answer to that, then we'd all be very happy, because that's something we've...
You're the expert. That's why I'm asking you.
I don't have the answer. I think many of us believe a couple of things. One, you're catching tumor in transit, right? So the idea is that you're capturing micrometastatic disease as it's making its way to the node or somewhere else throughout the body that you can eradicate, such that it doesn't establish metastatic disease, which actually kills patients in the future. So that's kind of one thought that I think makes some sense. And now in an era of where we're beginning to understand how the immune system works with radiation and works with the tumor itself, there's emerging data that priming of the immune system does occur with radiation treatment, and that perhaps that might explain some of that benefit as well, that as women receive radiation, it activates an immune system reaction that is not activated in the absence of the radiation, that then allows the immune system to more effectively manage micrometastatic disease if and when it develops. Okay. And I think the data is intriguing in that space. It's not there to definitively show that yet, but I think we're working towards that.
Sort of an intrinsic abscopal effect.
Yeah, and not truly an abscopal effect, but more of a, because you don't have disease, right? It's not an abscopal effect. It can't go affect that other disease, but more of a memory training and an activation of immune system such that they then maybe get memory T cells that then can respond to anything that does develop in the future.
Okay. So we don't know in the end.
So yeah. Lots of hand waving to say no.
So for patients that have achieved a complete pathologic response in the breast and nodes with a adequate node sampling or even dissection, is there any prospective evidence to suggest that those patients derive a benefit from post-op radiation therapy? We do it.
Yeah.
But for people with a true PCR, Is there any prospective evidence that giving radiation therapy helps them?
So put your patients on NSCBP B51. That is the trial that is going to answer that question. So we don't know. There is some intriguing single institution data to say that it is probably safe. This is in the context of patients that had a PATH CR in the nodes and in the breast, and then for whatever reason decided not to get treatment afterwards. And as you follow those patients, they do well. That's the foundation for that trial, but we're running a randomized trial now to ask
so
that.
So on B18 and B27, that happened.
Right.
And Terry Mominis tells me that, at least the last time I talked to him, that there were no relapses in those patients that didn't get radiation therapy who had PCRs.
So there are relapses. They're just very low. And he's presented that data multiple times at many meetings. The slides are out there. You can find them on the web. It's very intriguing data. I think it's a very intriguing concept. The reality is we don't know for sure. They're running the randomized trial now. That's accruing very well, and it's getting close to full accrual.
Nebraska have access to that trial. Does anybody have access to that trial in Nebraska? The prospect? Where? At Methodist?
And it's also
CHI
system.
Okay. It's at CHI. Yeah. That's the first I've heard of it. Thanks.
So put your patients on that trial. It's a great trial.
Good questions. Thank you very much. An excellent presentation. At this point, we're going to take a 30-minute break. I encourage everybody to interact with the exhibitors if they so wish. And we'll get started again in exactly 30 minutes.